The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News Talk.
The IRFU has been urged to reconsider its decision to ban transgender women from female contact rugby competition due to concerns that it will set a dangerous precedent in other sports. In a statement, the IRFU said the decision was based on medical evidence and follows World Rugby guidance. It's now been reported that the FAI and the Ladies Gaelic Football Association are to review the role of transgender players. Now, joining me with reaction is Matt Kennedy, policy and research officer with an organisation Belong To, speaking on behalf of Trans Equality Together. Good morning, Matt.
Morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. What is your reaction to the IRFU decision?
So I suppose our reaction from Trans Equality Together initially is that, you know, we're very disappointed in this decision to ban transgender women and girls from participating in contact rugby. It is our belief really that this is going to have a very negative effect on trans women and girls, their loved ones and the people that support them, because it's a policy that's dedicated to their active exclusion from a sporting space, which is going to have a knock-on effect in how it communicates how inclusive rugby is to them as a community, but also the wider LGBT community as well. And it also potentially sets a dangerous precedent that other sporting governing bodies will also follow suit in similar policy contexts as well.
Now, one of the criticisms that's often levelled against organisations when they make policy decisions like this is that they don't engage with the stakeholders. Well, the IRFU say that two registered players are affected by the rule change. And the IRFU said it's working with those affected by including options to remain active in the game, such as non-contact playing formats like tag rugby and so on, touch rugby, or refereeing or coaching or volunteering.
Well, I suppose in that context, you have to kind of acknowledge the fact that this is a policy that is dedicated to the active exclusion of trans women and girls, you know, in a contact rugby space. And I can appreciate that there are being moves made to include them in other contexts, but I'm really not sure how that is going to be possible when this communicates that effectively, you know, trans women and girls are not welcome in the overall setting of rugby. And this really is going to communicate that to, you know, all members of the trans community who are very upset and disheartened by this decision. It is very difficult to, you know, create the conditions that allow for inclusion when you have a policy that at its heart is driven by a desire to ensure that trans people are not safe and are not welcome in a rugby context.
Now, the IRFU have cited scientific research, and they talk about the biological advantages from testosterone. And this is where people have transed after they have reached puberty. So this is what they say: significant increase in total body mass, significant increases in lean stroke muscle mass and muscle density, reduction in body fat mass, improving strength and power to weight ratio, increased height, changed dimensions of important levers, a greater bone density, increased hemoglobin levels, increased heart and lung size, and the resultant performance differences, they say, significantly greater strength between 50 and 60% by adulthood, with relatively greater upper body strength, significant speed advantages between 10 and 15% over various durations, greater capacity to produce force and power, advantages of between 30 to 40% in explosive movement capabilities, strength to weight and power to weight advantages, even after adjusting for mass, height and similar level of performance, elite, untrained, etc., males have a 30 to 40% strength advantage. So that's the science they're quoting to suggest that trans women playing with women's rugby teams might be capable of inflicting greater damage on their opponents.
Well, you know, it would be our belief really that there are a number of unaddressed limitations with the research that's being relied upon to justify this complete ban on transgender women and girls participating. Really what we would be calling for is that there is a need for Irish specific research that engages, you know, more nuanced and a variety of different methodologies, looking to incorporate different disciplinary perspectives. And critically, it has to be done in conversation and consultation with rugby communities and trans communities affected as well. It needs to be acknowledged that rugby is a contact sport similar to any other contact sports. There is an element of risk. Part of that involves, you know, certain forms of assessments in terms of, you know, bodily difference, and that needs to be weighed up in the context of safety. I understand that entirely. But instead of, you know, carrying out, you know, risk assessments in order to understand potential risks that come with players participating, this has instead moved to target a marginalized community to ensure a complete ban on their participation, which is really reactionary to a hostile political climate towards transgender people that really isn't encapsulating of best practice in a policy context.
If you put another hat on for a moment and think of from the point of view of younger girls in school who are, you know, they want to play rugby and their parents are thinking, well, if they are up against other girls, trans girls who have this post puberty advantage of greater speed and greater strength, is my daughter safe? I mean, do you understand that kind of argument, that it's not just about the trans athletes themselves, it's also about the people with whom and against whom they will be playing?
Yeah, and I think that what's kind of being misconstrued in this context is that, you know, there are trans young people who are participating in sport as at a grassroots level, you know, at a community non-competitive level. They have been, you know, actively included by their teams, their communities and coaches, and actively, you know, what this kind of policy and this particular kind of conversation regarding their inclusion, it's positioning them consistently as men, as male and as boys, which is inherently transphobic. And it's also dehumanizing and doesn't recognize the personhood of that individual. These questions of safety, you know, are completely kind of eroding the principles of inclusion and fairness that are integral to, you know, sporting context. And there isn't enough of a justification on a case-by-case basis to, you know, craft an entire policy that excludes an entirely marginalized community on a hypothesized idea of safety.
Now, two questions arise. One is, when you're talking about maybe assessing people on an individual basis, so if you have someone who is, you know, physically disproportionate to the other members of both their own team and the opposing team, because they are a post-puberty trans athlete, do you think that, you know, I hate to think that this would be medicalized, that people have their body mass index assessed before somebody somewhere would decide whether or not they could play?
Absolutely. And this, you know, this is actually what this, the questions that this policy in and of itself raise. So, you know, a ban on, you know, transgender women and girls from contact rugby sports. My question really, you know, would be, how is that actually going to be carried out? Are they going to expect full disclosure from every single, you know, trans individual who's engaged in a rugby context? An individual's trans status is considered personal private information. Or on the flip side of that, as you mentioned, is it going to be done on the basis of assumption? Are the IRFU and, you know, rugby teams and communities expected to, you know, make a claim about an individual's identity on the basis of how they look, which is, you know, a very harmful and dehumanizing practice that will lead to, you know, invasive review, as you mentioned, you know, medicalizing an individual's body, which is very harmful to a community who is already consistently, you know, subjected to medical scrutiny.
Now, at elite level, of course, there is drug testing and, you know, there would be evidence of testosterone, whether it would be at an elevated level or otherwise. And if testosterone suppressing drugs are being taken, by a trans woman, then that would probably show up in the tests. But those tests, I think, only occur at elite level.
Yeah, and they won't occur now at all anymore. The, you know, I think it needs to be acknowledged. To the best of my knowledge, there are no transgender women playing at an elite level in an Irish context. If they had any, you know, role in playing at a competitive level, you know, at an elite or an amateur level, they now simply cannot play at all anymore. So there now is no scope.
No, what I'm suggesting that if you persuaded the IRFU to reverse their stance, that at elite level, then perhaps routine drug testing, which everybody would have to undergo randomly, might expose testosterone or even testosterone suppression. So privacy might go out the window.
Yeah, certainly. And I mean, this is that is the policy context that they had, you know, previously kind of been operating in terms of assessing, you know, for at an elite level, the testosterone levels of trans women, which, you know, while, you know, problematic because it subjects trans women to higher levels of medical surveillance than it does to non-trans women. There wasn't really the justification in an Irish context to move to a complete ban. The complete ban that we're seeing from the IRFU is purely reactionary in part to policy developments in the UK, but also more so from our perspective is more so responding to a hostile political climate that is really dedicated to reducing the spaces in which trans women and girls can exist safely, where they are welcomed and acknowledged.
Do you accept, though, that maybe international research is needed because of our small population? We're talking about a relatively small number of people and, you know, statistically research might not be acceptable if it's based on a tiny sample.
Well, I do think that there needs to be more nuanced global research, absolutely. And that's, you know, part of our call is that there does need to be global research. But again, it needs to acknowledge the limitations that are cropping up in the existing research. And it does need to have a greater engagement with different disciplines and other methodologies. And certainly, you know, a large part of the existing research has not been done in collaboration with relevant stakeholders, including, you know, rugby communities, coaches, teams, etc. And, you know, specifically trans people who are affected by this. So absolutely, I think larger, really robust global pieces of research are incredibly important in this context. But I also, you know, really do feel that given the, you know, the disappointment, the hurt and upset that it is happening as a result of this policy move, one of the ways in which we could address some of the harm that is inevitably going to come about as a result would be to actually engage affected communities who are engaged in the sport in an Irish context.
Now, it boils down to one simple question. If there is any kind of safety issue, the question will arise, you know, does inclusion trump safety or does safety trump inclusion?
But I think that, you know, realistically, the principles of safety, fairness and inclusion, they're intended to exist in tandem in a sporting context. Right now, you know, eroding the principles of fairness and inclusion in the name of, you know, a very unverified, I suppose, contentions around safety for all individuals has completely dismissed the importance of safety for transgender women and girls who, you know, across their social worlds are, you know, more likely to experience violence, harassment and discrimination than non-trans women and girls. That is wholly underconsidered within the context of this policy. And really, it is going to not only have an effect in other sporting contexts, but is also going to, you know, it's going to add to a climate that is already hostile to transgender women and girls. So really, the significance of you know, safety does, you know, always need to be considered in tandem with fairness and inclusion. Okay. It's not a case of one is more significant than the other.
And finally, Matt, then, your words to the FAI and the Ladies Gaelic Football Association, who will obviously formulate policies too.
Yeah, you know, I would say that, you know, Trans Equality Together as an organization, other relevant trans organizations and LGBT organizations who've been working in this area, we are a resource to be drawn on. We would really, you know, encourage that any policy decisions are done in the context of consultation, considering all relevant communities affected, and that these policies cannot be, you know, reactionary to pressure placed on them. In the context of a political climate that is, you know, is moving to you know, reduce the safety and inclusion of trans people in sporting spaces. There has been fantastic moves made in the last number of years around inclusion in sport. We want to see that continue. We are open as to, you know, remaining in dialogue with the RFU as well. You know, to consider how can we, you know, better include trans communities in sport, in rugby moving forward.
Matt Kennedy, a policy and research officer with Belong To, speaking on behalf of Trans Equality Together. Matt, thank you very much for joining us.
Cheers. Thanks, Pat.
Now, we did reach out to the RFU to speak with a representative on air, but they're not putting a spokesperson forward this morning.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.